Whether we need a break from the monotony of everyday life, a reason to put down the controller, get off the couch and do something socially active, or you simply want to do something different when you grab a cup of coffee with friends, Game House Cafe could be for you. I'm George Brooks, and this is The Games Afoot, where gaming means business. And today I have with me Robert and Terry, the co-owners of Game House Cafe in Glendale, California. A cozy spot to grab a panini or a coffee and pie while playing from a collection of over 1,600 board games, according to their website. If that sounds like fun, then we'll let you know how to contact them and set up your own visit later. But for now, let's get to know our guests. As I stated, they are Robert and Terry, the co-owners. Thank you for coming, guys.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm actually a little overwhelmed. As I was researching this, I saw that you guys have been featured at NBC LA, KCAL 9, the Los Angeles Times. You were voted best spot for board games in LA 2016 by Los Angeles Magazine. I'm like, wow, I don't know if I actually rate having these guys come on my show. I'm a little overwhelmed and very honored. So tell us a bit about yourselves. Childhood love of gaming, something you got into later in life, like what inspired you to go this route and actually have a cafe where people can come and sit and play board games and stuff?
Well, I played board games growing up as a kid. In fact, there's quite a number of them which are on the shelves, not actually the copies that I played, but the same titles that I had played. So my brother and I had played board games a lot as kids, and in college we sort of ended up falling into a group that played a lot of board games too. So there was some of the more recent stuff which is sort of on my radar in college, and then I kind of semi kept up with it, you know, after college, and then we kind of fell into doing it here, and then, you know, it kind of snowballed from there. So
when I was 12, I was asked by the cool kids in my class to become part of their D&D game. And I was so freaked out and self-conscious that I just completely didn't even want to do it. I didn't know what to make of it. And so I didn't really grow up with playing board games or RPG games or anything like that. I came to it very late. So it was really only about 10 years ago that I kind of rediscovered board games as an adult.
It's interesting how that works sometimes, because I pretty much fell into the same category. When I was a kid, I loved fantasy. I was a big Tolkien fan. I used to read a lot of Anne McCaffrey, stuff like that.
Okay.
But my brother was heavily into Dungeons & Dragons, but I was not. And he would invite me to come play in his group, and I'd rather read the books than try to sit there with a 20-sided die and create a character. And so it wasn't until later, when I actually got into video gaming and started playing role-playing games that way, and you know, got into Elder Scrolls, Mass Effect, mm-hmm. stuff like that, that I kind of came back into, and now I actually do play Dungeons & Dragons, play HeroClix, a lot of other stuff like that. So, like I said, I was an adult before I actually got into the actual tabletop gaming.
Sure.
And, yeah, I forgot. I did Dungeons & Dragons back in 82. I learned on first edition. That's how old I am. So, I forgot. That was probably one of the early, about the same time I was playing things like Dungeon and all the Monopoly and all that stuff like that, I kind of fell into D&D.
Yeah, I remember being a kid, like, board games were it. Like, everybody played table. That was, like, what you did with the family.
Mm-hmm.
We'd play Monopoly. We'd play Sorry, Trouble. I remember that Pop-O-Matic bubble.
Oh, sure, yeah.
My father and I used to play Risk a lot. And it kind of got away from that. Like, my parents even had, like, a Saturday night thing where they would get together with friends and play bridge or pinochle, you know, stuff like that. You don't see a whole lot of card games and board games like that anymore. So I think it's a really, really cool concept that, you know, so you reserve a table, I guess, like you call in advance and you say, we're coming in at this time and we're going to play. Like, how exactly does that work?
Oh, so our format is you can do a walk-in. which, depending on the day or the time of day, may or may not be a good idea. You can do reservations, but for us it's very difficult because if it's a busy day, and because of the format, because you can the basic model, to kind of rewind a little bit, the basic model is you pay a flat fee per person to come in, sit down. The food and drink is extra, but you can stay as long as you want, play as many games as you want in one sitting. Okay. You can't like go and come back 6 hours later because I couldn't even guarantee there'd be a table for you anyway. so you pay the one flat per person fee. And then you can stay as long as you want. Some people stay an hour. Some people stay 10 hours. You can play as many games as you want in that one session. We have to do reservations. You'd ask about reservations. We have to do reservations at least the day before. At the beginning of the day, we kind of have to know what the day looks like in terms of reservations. Because if it's a 3 o'clock on, let's say, a Saturday afternoon and we're booked full, if we're completely full and someone calls, I want to come at 5, you know, I want to bring 4 people at 5, there's no way we could guarantee a reservation.
Okay.
You know, because I don't know if all these tables are going to be staying till midnight or that sort of thing. So we do reservations. And on the busier times, which is to say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you pay a premium. You pay more than the walk-in, but the reservation is the guarantee.
Okay.
It's kind of like buying sporting tickets in advance versus, like, you know, the rush tickets at the like an hour before. But that's the format. It's like it's a per person fee. You come. We had over 1,600 games, and you kind of just grab stuff off the shelf and, you know, play as many as long as you want. So
that's cool. So was it difficult to get started with the business? Like when you guys got together and decided this is what we want to do, finding a space. Creating a business plan, maybe getting investors, like, was that difficult, or was this something that when people heard about it, they kind of went, yeah, you know what, that makes sense, that's interesting, I want to throw myself in, you know, behind that?
Well, we had come from pretty unconnected industries. Robert came out of production, out of the costuming industry, and I came out of graphic design. So when we decided to do this, it really was kind of jumping in headfirst and navigating the logistical and financial aspects of building a business from the ground up. So it was both terrifying and exhilarating, because building sort of a hybrid business model like we were doing, we didn't really have a template in the area to kind of point to and say, hey, they're doing it over in West LA.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just kind of see how they do it. The closest we could find was some cafes that had become successful in Toronto. So we were kind of trying to negotiate and navigate the logistics of trying to open a food and drink establishment in Southern California with the very specific local ordinances and requirements, and finding a space that would also accommodate restaurant food and drink and gaming. So that was, we had a whole list of things that we had to hit in order to make it hopefully a successful enterprise.
It's a trial by fire, particularly from two people who didn't have in the beginning, a business background.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said before to a number of people when I've talked about this, it's you have to learn that stuff if you don't know it. You need to, you can't just say, well, I don't know. You know, either you pay someone to do it, to do the heavy lifting, which in effect we do. We have an accountant, we have a lawyer, all that sort of thing. Or you learn it yourself. And you make those mistakes, you find out where those pitfalls are, or you do a lot of research, you do your due diligence, so to speak, to kind of figure out what you need to do to get it off the ground. And we've looked at so many spaces. We've visited so many, you know, building and planning offices, depending on, you know, LA, if it's LA, if it's a particular municipality, that sort of thing. So and we've read so much, you know, building code stuff, you know, it's so it's So you have to kind of dig in there and learn it, unless it just falls into your lap, and it never really falls into your lap completely. So, but even then, you, like, there's things we were learning in the first year too. You know, once the doors are open, you know, you shift into a whole different gear. Getting it open is one thing, and then having it open, maintaining it, managing it, and keeping it open is another thing, and then making it grow is even in something beyond that. So, so there was a lot of trial by fire. It was a lot of, you know, figuring this out. Oh, this happened. Okay, now I got to figure out how to figure that, you know, what this problem, this emerged now because of this happened. It's all these little dominoes and lots of crazy things that you would never think that have any effect on, or that people would take for granted in business, like, you know, parking. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, you could do it in this space, but you don't have the parking. You know, yeah, you could put a restaurant in here. You could turn this, you know, antique shop into a restaurant, but you don't have the parking, so you can't do it. You know, so on paper, you couldn't even get to the point where you'd submit plans to a building department because you just physically can't do it. So there was lots of crazy things like that, which you kind of learn as you go. You do as much research as you can, and then, you know, you find out what the reality is and see how that matches up, and then you kind of adjust accordingly.
So. Yeah, that I've experienced that, not as a business owner, but as an employee of a business, a place where I worked. It was a nightclub, mm-hmm. and they did not have sufficient parking, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So people would park across the street at another business, which they thought was okay because that business closed at 10 p.m. Yeah. So they're like, okay, there's no conflict. All their customers, but the owners of that business did not appreciate their parking lot being used for that purpose. Turned into an issue. Place is no longer open. It's now a gastropub. But that was a lot of the issue that was going on, was that when they opened the space, they did not anticipate the parking lot not being large enough mm-hmm. for their clientele to come and park. So, then it got into a whole thing when they decided they wanted to start serving food. And, you know, you can't smoke in a place that serves food.
It's a whole set of dominoes, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, you want to do this now. Okay, now this is going to require this, you know, and it's, we want to do this. Now this permit has to be gotten from the city mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing. So it's not so much of, it's not like a Andy and Judy, hey, there's a free barn, let's do a show sort of a thing. That's great. You know, it works great on paper. And then the reality of it is, oh, you don't have this, you're not approved for that. You know, so there's all these crazy little things that happen, you know, in just looking for a space and then finding a space. And then you get the space and then it's like, you got to do this. You have to put this in. You have to do this. You have to change this. So, so there was a lot of, you know, we were well prepared, I have to say. We had done a lot of research, you know, we talked to a lot of people, and we had figured out all manner of, you know, circumstances, all manner of scenarios, that sort of thing. What happens if this happens, you know? So we there were only a couple really crazy curveballs in the process of between putting it on paper and opening the doors, both of which, the two things which I think we kind of anticipated and were hoping wouldn't happen and ended up did happening, but we were able to kind of, you know, mitigate it. But it's crazy. I see, like, I was talking about this with someone actually yesterday, because she was starting a business. She was going to start a consulting business, and we were talking about doing the research and that sort of thing. And I remember saying, if I'm going to Butch and Sundance off the cliff, you know, dumping all this time and effort and money and resources in, I want to know that it's going to go. You know, I want to know that it's going to be successful, because there's tons of failed businesses out there.
All the time.
Yeah, exactly. You either have a lot of money and throw at it and it doesn't work, or you don't have a lot of money and throw at it and it doesn't work and you go do something else. So, and you've lost that money. So,
so other than ordinances, permits, stuff like that, dealing with the legal aspects to make sure that your business is following the law and you're paying the appropriate people, were there like obstacles or stuff like in the early stages that were unique to the concept? Like, for example, I know in my own house, it's very difficult to keep track of game pieces. So like, what did you anticipate? That, okay, we're going to have games here for them to play. They're going to lose the pieces. They're going to lose the dice. They're like, what do we do in that situation? Like, what were some things, like you said, you anticipated some things happening. Was that, A, one of the things you anticipated, and B, what did you put in place to kind of even that out?
One thing that we had to, once we opened the business, the concept of a board game cafe was still something we had to communicate and sort of sell. So the thing about someone walking into a space with 1,600 games is, of course, that's all they see. So that is, they see it as a gaming space.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes down to it, we function as a restaurant. That's how we make our money. That's how we kind of survive day to day, week to week, month to month. So there are certain things that we have to push as far as food sales and drink sales. That's a very fundamental core of what we have to do. So part of what we experience day to day is, I guess, dispelling the notion that we are just a gaming space or we're a community rec center. So we are at core a restaurant. We have to survive as a restaurant. So that's something we have to factor in every day.
We're still explaining the concept. You know, 4.5 years later, I'm just thinking, yeah, because it was about 4.5 years ago that we opened. We're still sort of selling it, you know, on a daily or weekly basis. I'm still running into people who are like, oh, what is this? I never heard of this thing. So, you know, so we're still kind of, you know, preaching to the masses, so to speak, of what this is, because it's still sort of an unknown quantity. It's still an unknown thing. They're not on, you know, board game cafes are not on every corner.
No, they're not.
So it's a weird kind of a, oh, is it a game store? Do you sell the games? Oh, you don't sell the games. Oh, is it a coffee shop? Okay, but you've got all these games. So, you know, so it's like this weird little hybrid model that for the most part, once you clue people in, they get it. So it's this weird little, it's still a weird little animal. It's still like a Pegasus unicorn with a leprechaun on it. but as for the game pieces, it's kind of funny because one of the most frequent questions we get, particularly from people who want to sort of emulate this model or who want to do this model in, you know, Boise or Sheboygan or wherever, is that it's like, well, what happens if you lose the pieces? It's like, well, you know, we've got drawers and boxes full of, you know, dice and pawns, and I've got, you know, 27 lead pipes from Clue and 30 and 37 water on the knees from Operation and all that sort of thing, because you kind of accumulate all this stuff because you're constantly replacing. There is no way. I remember someone walked in last year and they're like, well, how do you know all the pieces in my games? I'm like, well, I'm not going to lose sleep over it because I've got 1,600, you know, so... But we've got,
so
you know,
I
got
it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's
just ask.
It's
yeah.
Exactly. Well, we do. We have a little thing in the box lids of all the games. It says, "Hi, this is property of Game House. We hope you have fun." All that sort of thing. You know, check to make sure all the pieces are there. If not, let us know. We'll switch things out if we need to. Sort of thing. Please put all the pieces back in the box. And, you know, knock on wood. So it's a very frequent question. I've got, like, you know, we have a little piece jar up front where if you find stuff, you can't remember who was playing what where, that sort of thing, if you don't recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because with 1,600 games, there's no way to recognize it. We're just not that good. You know, it's, you know, there's so much stuff out there. But and we're constantly replacing stuff. You know, I'll go on eBay all the time and say, oh, there's 27, you know, lead pipes from Clue. I'll buy that, you know, because I'm going to need them.
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of spare bits and that sort of thing. But it's not nearly as stuff doesn't get damaged nearly as frequently as you would think. We've had very few moments where, like, the latte gets spilled all over the game and it's completely ruined, you know.
It is funny how that works too, because, like, I've noticed that people tend to be a lot more careful with things like that than they do with their own stuff.
Oh, sure. For the most part, people are pretty reverential about it. You know, I've only had a couple problems where it's like, you know, you open a copy of Operation and someone's dumped a bowl of salsa in it, you know. So
that's actually a true story.
Okay. First 2 months.
So as a restaurant, what types of food do you serve? They can go online and look at your menu, but just, you know, kind of give them an idea of what to expect when they walk in. Like, what's the menu like, drink options, food options, so on.
Sure. Part of what we wanted to do was to create an experience, so that hopefully also extends to the menu. We wanted to do a pretty simple menu of very, very casual food, very, very kind of very approachable dishes. So when we created the menu, we wanted to kind of bring in the theme of board gaming. So one of our favorite games is Ticket to Ride. So we have a turkey sandwich called Turkey to Ride. And the deduction game Werewolf, we use that to name our roast beef sandwich, which has sriracha mayo and cheddar. So it's things like that. And part of what I wanted to do with opening this business was I'm a little obsessed with making pies. So we try to do lots of pies every week. So that's something that's sort of an in-house specialty.
Okay, so if you're into pie, go to Game House because they have pie. So you said there weren't a whole lot of places like this, especially in this area when you guys started out. You've been doing this for 4.5 years, which amazes me because a lot of restaurants do not last that long. A lot of them are gone within the first year, so you must be doing something right. Someone just starting out, not necessarily this business itself, but just in business. Like you said, there were a lot of things that you anticipated going wrong that did, so you were somewhat prepared for them. What advice would you give to anyone who wanted to go the entrepreneur route and start their own business?
There's a lot of good resources out there. I did a lot of seminars at SCORE, which is like the retired entrepreneurs free consulting thing. And there are different offices. I think it's a national program, but there are different offices throughout the country. And they offer sort of one-on-one pairing up of retired entrepreneurs in similar or the same businesses. But they also offer seminars in different aspects of, you know, there's like, you know, cash flow projections, or they'll do one about, you know, hiring and managing people and interviewing, hiring and managing people, that sort of thing, human resources style.
Is it like a mentorship program?
It's sort of, yeah. But a lot of it will be focused on people who are just starting out on a business. And that was actually a really good resource. I've not been able to avail myself of it since we've opened. But they're always doing seminars each week and of different aspects of that sort of thing. So there are resources out there.
I think they also do really good QuickBooks workshops.
Yeah, well, they do. Yeah, like it's stuff like stuff like QuickBooks and WordPress and that sort of thing, and you know, search engine optimization and all that sort of stuff. So they're actually keyed in really with the tech too, but because it's such a, you know, tech driven, you know, world now. But there are resources out there to sort of knock on those doors and kind of, you know, find those people who are willing to sort of share, you know, their story, because they were there ages ago, mm-hmm. you know, in the same shoes that these other people were. And truth be told, I don't know what the ratio is in the number of people who go to these workshops in versus the number of people actually end up going into business. So, but it's all manner of. I remember one workshop, someone wanted to do like a janitorial supply company. There was a lady sitting next to me who had a vegan food company. So all sorts of different, you know, one guy wanted to do a comedy club. So there are all sorts of different, you know, types of business out there. But SCORE is a really good resource in that regard. And we actually had a partnership with Tasteful Cakes out in Corona. They've been in the business for about 10 or 12 years now. One of the co-owners of that was a very good mentor and a very good sounding board for us as well. So it'd be like, you know, we'd have like the most obscure question, like, you know, in working on it, you know, I was like, well, what about this? And he's like, oh yeah, well this, da, 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 da. So in a lot of cases, a lot of what he said was a really good guiding, a really good steering, in terms of, you know, yeah, don't worry about this, or yeah, have you thought about this, you know, sort of.
So definitely part of the process is also annoying your friends and seeing if anyone can give insight into what you're trying to do.
All right, so what are your hours at the Game House Cafe?
We are open 6 days a week. We are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 12 a.m. And Sunday we're open 11 to 9. We are closed on Mondays. And then certain holidays we're also closed. We usually have that information on our Facebook and all that.
So, okay. And your Facebook page would be?
Gamehouse Cafe.
Gamehouse Cafe. You have Instagram?
Instagram, Twitter. Yeah, it's all under Gamehouse Cafe.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming by. I hope
Thanks
our
for
listeners
having us.
Enjoyed it. I wish you guys much success. Like I said, you've been going on for 4.5 years. That's great. Many, many more until you either get tired of it or retire and pass it on to somebody else. So, yeah, folks, check out Gamehouse Cafe. They're located at 1800 Brand Boulevard in number 107, Glendale, California, 91204. As they said, they're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gamehouse Cafe. Also, you can look them up at gamehousecafe.com. Their phone number is 818-937-9061. That's 818-937-9061. Drop by, make a reservation, go check them out. Sounds like a lot of fun, sounds like a good place. And if you like pie like I do, even though I can't eat any right now, they have pies. That just clicked with me. I like pie. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you once again for coming by. And until next time, this has been the Games Afoot. I'm George Brooks. Thank you for listening.